to the Columbia Center for Spiritual Living, a welcoming and diverse community whose vision it is to contribute to a world that works for everyone. The inspirational message you are about to hear will expand your idea of what is possible in life right now and affirm your soul's knowing in taking that right next step towards your greatest good.
Well, good morning, Columbia CSL, and to all of those joining in. I am really grateful and excited to return to be with all of you, beloveds, in self-contemplation as we continue to address the basic principles of the science of mind and spirit teachings. I've been studying this particular teaching since 1990, and it never grows old. I don't even grow old because of it. I so love this teaching, as it encourages me to be whatever I want to be when I want to be it. It doesn't suggest that I become positive when I'm feeling negative, but hands me a blend of scientifically proven practices, buoyed up by spiritual principles and universal natural laws to use if I want to. This teaching does not boast it is the only way. But it does state that there is a power for good in the universe that we can use consciously if we choose to. This is a rudimentary mind map, really, based as much in the mystical, the realm of cause, as it is the tangible, the realm of effect. And nowhere does it point to the goal being enlightenment, but simply natural evolution of consciousness ongoing, in which one's awareness increases. In fact, I came across a piece written by Adyashanti entitled, you're going to laugh at this, Enlightenment is a Big Joke. That's why I had to read it for you. And it kind of drives my point home. Adyashanti says, do not think that enlightenment is going to make you special. It is not. If you feel special in any way, then enlightenment has not occurred. I meet a lot of people who think they are enlightened and awake simply because they have had a very moving spiritual experience. They wear their enlightenment on their sleeve like a badge of honor, and they sit among friends and talk about how awake they are while sipping coffee at a cafe. The funny thing about enlightenment is that when it is authentic, there is no one to claim it. Enlightenment is very ordinary. It is nothing special. Rather than making you more special, it is going to make you less special. It plants you right in the center of a wonderful humility and innocence. Everyone else may or may not call you enlightened, but you know, when you're enlightened, the whole notion of enlightenment and someone who is enlightened is a big joke. Adyashanti says, I use the word enlightenment all the time, not to point you toward it, but to point you beyond it. So don't get stuck in enlightenment. So today, rather than looking at a state of being to attain enlightenment, let's look at the process by which natural conscious evolution begins as we explore self-prophecy, a way forward. Now, nobody, including me, likes to hear someone say that they should be smiling when they are frightened or angry, or that they should look to the good when they're immersed in the shadows. We don't need to debate the presence of light in dark and darkness in light, as we know that this is a spiritual universe which is whole, perfect, and complete within itself, and therefore all that exists, exists in it and as one with it. But, if we could only just see into the future, just a little bit, well, I'd like to start by remembering a well-known gentleman by the name of Edgar Cayce and lead into this idea of self-prophecy being a way forward. Edgar Cayce has been called the sleeping prophet father of holistic medicine, and the most documented psychic of the 20th century. For more than 40 years of his life, his adult life, Casey gave psychic readings to thousands of seekers while in an unconscious state, diagnosing illness and revealing lives lived in the past and prophecies yet to come. Later in life, Casey would find that he had the ability to put himself into a sleep-like state by lying down on a couch, closing his eyes and folding his hands over his stomach. Now, in this state of relaxation and meditation, he was able to place his mind in contact with all time and space, the universal consciousness, also known as the superconscious mind. Many people are surprised to learn that Edgar Casey was a devout churchgoer and Sunday school teacher. At a very young age, Casey vowed to read the Bible for every year of his life, and it was said that at the time of his death in 1945, he had accomplished this task. Perhaps the readings said it best. When asked how to become psychic, Casey's advice was to become more spiritual. Holmes wrote much about the mystic state and felt that psychics read human thought while mystics sensed the atmosphere of God. Holmes wrote, "The mystics of every age have seen, sensed, and taught the same truth. Psychic experiences, on the other hand, bears the exact opposite testimony as they move more or less in a contradiction of each other. For each psychic sees a different mental picture. The psychic sees largely through his own or another's subjective mentality. Consequently, the psychic's impressions are more or less colored by the vibrations of his own or another's thought. This is why, generally speaking, no two psychics see the same thing. Mystics have all sensed one identical reality, and their testimony is in no way confusing." Do you think Edgar Casey might have been both? And what about you? A self-fulfilling prophecy is the socio-psychological phenomenon of someone predicting or expecting something, and this prediction or expectation coming true simply because the person believes it will, and the person's resulting behaviors align to fulfill the belief. The principle behind this phenomenon is that people create consequences regarding people or events based on previous knowledge of the subject. Now, there are three factors within an environment that can come together to influence the likelihood of a self-fulfilling prophecy becoming reality. And these would be appearance, perception, and belief. When a phenomenon cannot be seen, appearance is what they rely upon when a self-fulfilling prophecy is in place. American sociologist W.I. Thomas was the very first to discover this phenomenon. In 1928, he developed the Thomas Theorem, also known as the Thomas Dictum, that said, "If men define situations as real, they are real in their consequences." In other words, the consequence will come to fruition based on how one interprets the situation. Because of the way that Thomas defined a self-fulfilling prophecy, a person's perception can be self-creating if they believe they have acted upon it by their behavior, which aligns with the outcome. Now, we all know that we cannot rely on worldly events or in-home situations or even the last conversation that went sideways or fabulously to determine our perception of ourself, God expressing as us. So here is the defining moment where our self-selected, self-imposed prison sentence begins, when we believe what they say. They say that growing old is not for sissies, but ascending the ladder of love and wisdom by living aligned with universal laws and spiritual principles is heaven on earth. Similarly, they say that when you are your own doctor, you have a fool for a client. Well, we don't have a doctor's training and can't always be the best objective judge of our conditions and circumstances. However, we can intuit the best treatment course, which ends up being much of what we didn't heed, being understanding and experience as prevention. You know, this is when we become the fool, having nothing to do with needing a doctor's diagnosis. Becoming our own prophet really means having spiritual authority. I'd like to say it that way. I define spiritual authority as believing in order to access the power for good with a very clear decision to direct the power for good operating in alignment with its inherent nature, which is love leading the way through the law of its being, or love inspiring creation and the law making it manifest. Living as our own prophet, we are aware and in support of taking responsibility for co-creating our reality, as well as being accountable without question for all our results. We affirm by this choice of mindset and the congruent self-expression that we are setting up perception and ways of practice with conscious intent to awaken the Christ consciousness within. Ready and open to receive all consequences of how we have used the law will invoke a holistic tendency towards living a more theocentric rather than an egocentric existence. Theocentrism is the mindset or mind meld, I like to say, of an ego perception of separatism into oneness. And this choice puts us in the position of having spiritual authority over our life, and we consciously, in alignment with the power for good, become our own self-fulfilling prophecy. Consciously working with the law changes the entire game of life for good, and I mean that both ways. The foundation of this teaching explains how the universal creative process works, moving invisible substance into visible form, noting that back of all creation is the one causal impetus, the action of an infinite intelligence knowing itself. Take a breath. You know, before we dive into this piece, what it does, as we follow along in the first four introductory chapters in the Science of Mind text, it's always good to review the first two, I think, which were the thing itself and the way it works, which is no mystery at all, really. You know, just scientific evidence affirming natural laws of the universe, plus a bit of sage advice sprinkled on top. Its law in action affirms the nature and the natural spiritual principles causal to all existence. So let's just do a quick review of the last 2 weeks to set the stage. Good is universal, because the nature of the thing itself is energy, mind, and intelligence, spirit, finding conscious and individual centers of expression through us. Our intelligence is the universal mind functioning at the level of our concept of it. This then is the essence of our entire teaching. This is the creative process of invisible energy of spirit becoming visible as form, otherwise known as cause and effect. Spirit is first cause, back of all life. Our thought and emotion is the use we make, consciously or unconsciously, of this original creative thing that is the cause of everything. This is where the metaphysical idea of one plus one equals one comes from. Since spirit is causal to everything, as it creates out of itself through love's nature made manifest through the law of its being, then nothing can exist outside of spirit. Therefore, invisible cause plus visible form equals spirit. 1 + 1 = 1. Another beautiful understanding is that the seed of perfection hidden within always is there, meaning that within each planted thought seed, the perfect unfoldment to its own developed potential exists, as all is born from and exists as the infinite creative intelligence, God Source. Right use of the law of mind in action means use the law by imprinting it with thoughts and emotions that are born of right thinking or right intention, and therefore carry the energy of the qualities of God. It is when we misuse the law, Holmes emphatically states, we cause personal suffering, and that does not come from God. And lastly, spirit works for us by working through us. All creation is through the action of a universal creative process. We cannot recognize this power and become power to use within us if we are believing that it doesn't work through us. Get that? We can't use it if we don't believe it works through us. Always available in everyone, equally present, but only accessible to those who believe in its presence and enter into its presence, just like we did in that beautiful meditation this morning, in that reading, in that music. And furthermore, our belief is what sets the limit to all our demonstrations, as we are using a principle which, of itself, is without limit and ready to fill everything because it is infinite. The review is done. Take a breath. And now we're going to enter into the third chapter, what it does. Everything in existence already exists as infinite potential. And it is through the belief we establish of our unity and through our constant practice of communing with the sacred nature of this truth that we are positioned to derive the benefits which the greater mind is willing to reveal or impart to us. Again, spirit can only give us what we not are willing but can take. Spirit can only give us what we not are willing, but can take, based upon who we believe we are. Another way to say this is, it imparts of itself only as we partake of its nature. That's the way Holmes puts it. It can only tell us what we can understand. Here we are seeing the universal law of correspondence in action. What it does. Universe is impersonal and responds affirmatively to all alike. It says yes, never no, as yes is life-giving, and no is in the realm of the absolute nature of the universe, not a real thing. Just like dark is not an entity unto itself, it is the absence of, or the sacred complement to the existence of light, or our recognition of light. Better said. Point number three, this law is immutable, but our directing thought is spontaneous because its foundation is free willy. Oh, I'm sorry. I had to say that this morning. Point number four, love rules through law. Love is the inspiration, the impulse, the creative urge. It is the divine givingness, and the law is the way that spirit moves into form or cause. Our thought plus feeling becomes our self-fulfilling prophecy. Point number five, mental work is definite. Mental work is definite. Each state of thought taps the same principle. Each uses the same law and is inspired by the same spirit, but each draws forth a different result. Now, this is how we come by the term multiplicity from unity. one mind in which we think, move, and have our being, expressing differently in accordance with our individuality, our free will. Full stop. And here's a footnote. We cannot bring about good and evil from the one source, because the first principle is goodness, and only insofar as our thought and action tend toward a constructive program for goodness, or the highest and best outcome for me and for all, will it eventually succeed. Take a breath and let that settle. Now, I can't really speak about what it does without addressing what is ours to do, right? Because there's two of us here with one mind. So what's ours to do? Well, there's so many things I could say about this, but I'm going to reach for this first. Not count on hope to pave the way, but rather just open the door to possibility. You know, hope is a subtle illusion. Hoping something will happen in our favor is not the scientific use of the principle of intelligence or right use of the law. Because we are not definite and clear. We are unclear and in a state of wanting. Or, to state this differently, we're clear about something missing and available outside our own capacity. What is ours to do? Wow. Rebecca spoke about this in the meditation. You know, I think it's ensure love points our way. Neil Donald Walsh said that in his very first book he authored, Conversations with God. What would love do now? So ensure love points our way. As whatever points our way, be sure the law will make it possible. The next thing I'd like to say is watching our words. What is ours to do? We need to watch our words. And we need to use inclusive language. As we are analyzing our mindset and attempting to shift our mindset and communicate our journey and spirit, you know, most particularly around the resistance to or banishment of our own humanity or ego. Our language tends to kind of fall off to the other end of the continuum when we disapprove or critique our humanity. Watch that. Remember the point before. Ensure love points the way when we speak of our humanity. What is ours to do? Continue setting our new course. We must stop living in the past, but in the present, because there's no precedent in principle. There's no time and space. There just is now, this creative moment. And there's no scientific or spiritual reason or proof that can prove otherwise than that. So continue to set your new course. And commune, pray unceasingly. Turn to the greater truth of all and for all. This will lead you to a way to transcend the present condition or your personal perception of what is going on in your world, the world. We can live in this mindset only if we observe, embrace, and address the growth potential present in each moment that our humanity is expressing. And I think the last thing I'd like to share, what is ours to do, is around this concept of original thinking. Original thinking brings different results and new experience. It helps us to know in more observable ways that spirit works for us by working through us and affirms and grows our feeling and faith in oneness and the power for good that is using us, but that in return we can use. You know what? I walk through my days checking in with myself all the time, really. And some of the questions I ask are, will my thoughts, words, and actions bring me more in alignment to the qualities of God or further away? That's a pretty easy one. Some use, does this bring me joy? You know, another one I use is, am I being for or against life as it shows up? Or this one, am I being for or against life as I show up? You know, neither the science of mind philosophy, science, or the mystics through the ages tell us to be positive about the negatives, do more, to be more, have more, is, you know, all that's gone. Cut, modify, alter. Be more grateful, kind, be more spiritual. You know, it's all about understanding the nature of all and the revealing of our own wholeness and truth. You know, in this increasing pace of change in our world, it's calling forth in us a new way of being and seeing. We must consciously work to transcend our old and even our current ways of thinking and being to encourage the new to emerge within us. There's no longer time in which this unfolding can occur, but in the now. And let it not unfold in some leisurely, offhanded fashion. The world around us is speeding up too fast to allow that to work. In fact, we have seen a huge rejection of evolutionary thought in the recent inconsistent struggle for what to believe throughout this pandemic. People want to return to an idealized concept of the past because they have not adopted or adapted to the emerging future. The problem with that view is this. The emerging future does not care about our comfort. It will continue to emerge and we must adapt. Now, the irony is that this speeding up is our own doing. The planet itself is not getting more complex. Human society is. Herein lies the paradox. The world of form and what we call truth. By metaphysical standards, the work that Dr. Holmes put together offers us a way in and through thinking and feeling that we live in separation in a world that can't work for us nor anyone else. And the science of mind teaches religious science, meaning religion, dealing with being and God's perfection, and science, dealing with how things work in the world. If we believe our philosophy is valid, then we must look at our practice. Holmes says love works through law, but how does love work? Or how does law work? Law or principle works through process. We must apply a principle through the process of everyday living to change our lives for the better. I like to think as living a spiritual life is more up close and impersonal than personal. Because of how vitally important it is that we have the ability, by using spiritual principles and aligning ourselves with the natural laws, to detach ourselves from the seeming paradox in the world of facts. Up close and impersonal. This is how we do what is ours to do. First expand and raise consciousness, then take mindful action in our everyday lives. So, what would it be like to be defined by the unknown, the infinite intelligence, instead of the angst we sometimes self-generate in order to improve ourselves or gain approval by the world? Well, I know one thing. Until the excitement of the unknown defines us, we are not free. Ernest Holmes revealed more of his mystical nature in the later stages of his life in a work called Voice Celestial. I'd like to share a piece of that with you now. So just take a breath and close your eyes if you can, wherever you are, and listen to these profound words. In every drop, the sea, in every cell, the universe, in every soul, the life of God, and each contains full power of all. Life does not come in parts, but wholes. There is no separation. No near, no farther out, no deeper down, no higher up, no void, no yonder, and no hopes that cannot be fulfilled. The power of all obtains in all, and everywhere is here, and here is there. Draw thou on it, if thou wouldst truly be complete, nor suffer thirst again. Each soul is drawn from circuits of the universe. where life and actions have their center and where every point is joined with every point. And each event unites with each event in sequence after sequence without end. And all the seasons of becoming are unfoldment of events that form a chain to stretch into eternity. And step by step, man walks among the sun and the stars, consorting with the hosts of beings whose existence he has never known until he struck a higher chord in his own soul to which they could respond. My beloveds, how often it seems easier to resist the call of a greater becoming, remaining within the dark cocoon of a self that is settled for good enough. Let us choose not to remain at mere good today, but answer the call to greatness. Our dreams are waiting for us to come true. Be thy own prophet as a way forward. And so it is.
Thank you for listening. If you have received a value, we invite you to share this podcast and check out our website, columbiacsl.com, to sign up for our weekly newsletter, providing thought-provoking blogs and details on our upcoming classes and community events. And we always are pleased to hear from you. You can reach us at podcast@columbiacsl.com. Thank you. Blessings on your journey.